I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so in the third quarter, after the play that I just described, which was the one, I think, concerning play to me, again, nothing's overly concerning. It's 1 week. It was Jaden Daniels' first game. I was really overall impressed with a lot of things he did. I did have Mitch. I don't think it was Mitch in New Jersey. I think it was a different Mitch. Sent me a text, sent me a tweet that said, "So poise, accuracy, deep ball. Check out play number one in the miss to Terry," which is pretty funny because, right, like he was clearly had some nerves on that backwards throw to Brian Robinson Jr. on the first play of the game that lost a bunch of yards. He wasn't exactly accurate, and then the one deep shot and Terry's open, he overthrows him. I'm going to give him a break on all that in his first game. I think we're going to see a lot of long ball hookups. I do. And by the way, after that first play, he was pretty smooth, pretty calm, pretty poised the rest of the way. But I didn't love the second and eight sack. I thought that there was an opportunity to deliver quickly with processing, with, you know, quick release, identification of Ertz and McCaffrey, the blitz, and he backed up out of the pocket and got hit. But it was the next play that was, to me, the most interesting. And I was sitting here and I was watching the All-22 when it came out yesterday. And I'm like, because I did, we talked about that play yesterday. And I'm like, that had to be a McCaffrey throwback to somebody. Or, you know, but you couldn't see it on the television, you know, copy. So what the play was, clearly was, it was designed for Jaden to throw a quick bubble to McCaffrey on 3rd and 18. By the way, on 3rd and 18, what are teams expecting defensively? They're expecting screen. They're expecting draw. They're expecting bubble, right? And a bubble in that particular instance at the Tampa 46-yard line, you hope can get you 7, 8, 9 yards, and you got a chance at a field goal, which, by the way, is what happened. When he caught it, he ran for 8 yards, and that brought on Cade York for a 56-yard attempt that had plenty of distance but was, once again, no good. But the play, and it becomes so clear in watching it on the All-22, is for McCaffrey to throw the ball back to Jaden Daniels. A lateral, a backwards pass, legal backwards pass, because they are setting up a wall on the other side with 4 blockers. And I don't know why McCaffrey didn't throw it. It's totally fooled Tampa Bay. It is set up beautifully. There is a corner downfield that Deami Brown is in front of. He's going to have to block him, but there are going to be a couple of blockers leading the way before they even get to Deami Brown in the cornerback. And it's Jaden Daniels who, if he can make the catch, and look, the throw's got to be a good one. When I say throw, the lateral, the backwards pass has to be a good one. Meaning you can't throw it, you know, you can't balloon it, giving the other players that have been fooled by this bubble screen time to react and time to get back into the play, right? It's got to be a good pass from a guy who has played quarterback in college at Nebraska, played quarterback at Rice when he transferred to Rice before being switched to a wide receiver. I don't know why he didn't throw the ball. I don't know why he didn't go backwards to Jaden. It is set up perfectly. This play, first of all, it's 3rd and 18. It gets the first down, I think, at the very least. It probably scores because it's the most dangerous, electrifying offensive player on the field. This is not, you know, some of you, when I tweeted this out yesterday, right after I watched it, I'm like, look, I'm going to talk about this on the shows, but I can't wait for you guys to see this. I can't believe they didn't run it. I can't believe McCaffrey didn't throw it back. Now, you know, some people said, well, he's got a defender. No, he didn't. If he turns and the way the play is designed, if he turns and he it back right away. It's an easy pitch catch to Jaden, and Jaden's off to the races. Somebody else said, well, you can see the sun, and it's true. There's some sun where he kind of catches the ball, and maybe it's in his eyes, and that distracted him. Okay. I guess that's a possibility. But that's touchdown or long gain, worst case. But with Jaden, I'm going to guess, given his ability with four blockers basically in front of him, that he's going to score on this play. Now, the Buccaneer players on the other side of the field covering the bubble screen, they're going to get back into the play. But you're talking about, you know, possibly the fastest guy on the field with a wall set up, a punt return wall set up. So I don't know why he didn't throw it, but it was interesting. And several of you sent me notes last night, and Denton has the Dan Quinn soundbite from this. Dan Quinn was asked about kind of Luke McCaffrey. He wasn't asked specifically, I don't think, about that play, Denton. He may have been. I don't know. I just saw the answer in print. Go ahead and play the question and the answer where he refers to this particular play.
Yeah, I thought it was a very competitive play from Luke, you know, down towards the goal line at the end of the game. And that was one, Ben, that stood out to me to go. And what I also thought is that Luke doesn't want to play quarterback. He certainly had a chance at the double pass down the field. I think the shot to Terry.
Boom. That's all I need. Yeah, he told you that's the play. He doesn't want to play quarterback. He had a chance for the double pass. Yeah, it's not technically, you know, a double pass down the field because he's throwing a backwards lateral to Jaden, but we understand what he's saying. What a beautifully set up play. It's a shame. Now, you know, he was a quarterback, but it's possible he throws a bad ball to Jaden or Jaden can't handle it and the ball's on the ground and it gives, I don't know. But if the play's executed and he turns immediately and throws it back to Jaden Daniels, it's 16-14. Pretty good chance that it's 16-14 in the third quarter. Would they have won the game? No, because they could not stop Tampa. They could not stop. But, you know, game context tends to, you know, score and game situation stuff tends to change just the dynamic of the game, the personality of the game, the pressure that's on the team with the ball in a game that they were up by 9 and now it's only 2. And by the way, the boost it gives the entire team, the defense comes, you know, all that stuff. But I don't know. I have no idea why he didn't throw it. But I'll tell you what, the fact that Quinn, and he probably should not, I mean, he wasn't even asked specifically about it. He was asked about the performance of the receivers, including Luke McCaffrey. He probably shouldn't have offered up that because they could have used it again. Now, anybody watching the All-22 and preparing for it, any NFL team is probably going to see, oh, my God, why didn't he throw it back to Jaden? And they've got that in the playbook. Several of you said, well, you know, bottom line is it would have been a dumb play because remember what they did to Griffin? You know, the play. By the way, I'm forgetting who threw that pass to Griffin. Why do I think it was Randall L? But it wouldn't have been Randall L on that team.
No, it was definitely
Josh
not.
Morgan?
It was not Randall L. It might have been Josh Morgan. I'm going to look that up real quick. Randall L was
in the Pittsburgh
retired.
Game in 2012, and Griffin got, you know, smacked hard. And we were all like, what are you doing throwing a pass? That was a pass, though, down the field with him being covered. This was a lateral with a punt return wall set up, and he's already been running the entire game. I don't know. I have no idea. But probably have to put that one back for a while because it was so obvious it would have worked. And, you know, and then Dan went and admitted that the play was called that way. But for whatever reason, Luke McCaffrey decided he didn't want to be the quarterback on that play. You know, I was thinking about this, too. It's like the perfect time to run it because third and long for a defense is draw, screen. You know, we're going to play everything underneath. and they're going to throw something, you know, underneath and a screen, a bubble, and we're going to tackle 8 yards and we're going to force a long field goal or punt. By the way, defensively in those spots, I've always had a problem with teams that allow those 8 to 9 yards. You should be playing 3rd and 18 in that spot to prevent field goal range. Now, Cade York's different, although they didn't know that really, probably. But it's like the perfect spot to run at 3rd and 18 because a defense is totally thinking, and they're usually 100% right that the team's going to try to get 8 to 10 yards for a field goal on a quick bubble screen or a quick draw. And once they saw the bubble set up on the other side, they're like, bubble, 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 here it comes. And, you know, really, are you going to try a trick play on 3rd and 18? Interesting stuff. Too bad that it didn't work out. All right. That is basically upon further review. We'll give you guys a chance to weigh in next hour. Denton's got some news coming up. And then Aaron Schatz from DVOA, Fantasy FTN, which is the group he is with now. He is the creator of the DVOA metric. He'll jump on with us, and we'll talk about some of the Week 1 results at 11:35. Denton, is that right?
Yep.
Okay, we'll do Denton News next.
I'm John Aran, Pucks sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hitting the news you might have missed, it's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do we got today?
All right, so we're going to start with some positive. We didn't get the opportunity to talk about this yesterday, but it did have to do with the game. The team's official Instagram account posted prior to the game that Mike Sellers was on the sideline. I believe he lives in the Florida area, and we know around this time last year he was dealing with some health complications, but he looked really good. He was on the sideline shaking hands, and the team posted about it, so really good to see Mike Sellers up and seemingly in good health.
That is great news. That really is wonderful news. And for those of you who don't know, he required, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to get this wrong. I didn't know you were going to have this in your news today. But he required, wasn't it a heart transplant?
It was some sort of heart procedure. I don't know what exactly it was, but it was some sort of heart procedure.
Yeah. It was a bit of a dire situation for him. So, you know, he was a favorite player for teammates. He was a player that Joe liked a lot. Tough player. So happy he's healthy. What else?
You were correct, by the way. It was a heart transplant. But yes, very good that he is he's healthy. So we mentioned this, that the team cut Cade York. They signed Austin Siebert. He was one of the rare kickers, it feels like, that was drafted. He was drafted in 2019. Hasn't played a ton of football. He's a career 45 of 56 in his, you know, 6, 7 years, 5 years, whatever that is, math. But he is now the new kicker for the Commanders. It took 1 week to ditch Cade York, and maybe if you care about looking way ahead, only having Cade York play a week means that the Commanders keep the draft pick that they initially traded for him.
Yeah, here we go, you know, again with the issue of kickers. I mean, it's just amazing this team has had so many of these runs where, you know, you're just in a situation where you don't have an answer at that position. It's like I was putting together the list yesterday and then I just kind of gave up. But the names like Chris Blewett and Brian Johnson and Nick Rose in recent years. Dustin, I think I mentioned this, that Dustin Hopkins is, in terms of kickers, is third behind Mosley and Lohmiller in terms of the number of games that he's actually kicked for this franchise. But It's unbelievable the stretches. Like there was a stretch, and I went back and looked at like this stretch in the early 2000s when it was Brett Conway and Chris Hepner and Scott Bentley and Michael Husted and Jose Cortez and James Tuthill until they finally decided in free agency to go out and sign John Hall. But there was like that stretch of like a year to 2 years where after Brett Conway, they couldn't find anybody. They had that period with Nick Novak and Ola Kimron, before they finally found Sean Sweezum, who kicked for them, and then Graham Gano for a few years. But then they had Cundiff, and Kai Forbath was here for a few years. You know, Dustin Hopkins, we've talked about this. Dustin Hopkins has been a pretty good kicker in the NFL. You know, he's not made a Pro Bowl yet. I don't think he has. But he's a decent kicker in the NFL. He just got extended in Cleveland. The problem was he had missed some field goals, and he missed a short one in the Kansas City game in 2021, and they had had it. Look, before Ron got here, he missed some massive kicks in 2016. The 2016 season with Hopkins, all right, the ones that just pop off in my head. The one in London that he shanked in overtime and the game ended in a tie. It was like a 30-yarder. Now, the field was a crap field, but 30-yard field goal. And the week before, I think, or maybe 2 weeks before, he missed two kicks, I think it was, in Detroit that would have won the game. The Thanksgiving Day game in 2016, remember that unbelievable back, that it was an offensive, shootout. They lost by five, but he missed two kicks in that game that would have been difference makers. And, and then it was, I think it was 2021. I'm just pulling up the 2021 season. When they played the Chiefs, he missed a short field goal, and that was it. They had had enough at that point. And I think he had missed a PAT in the week before game. But he's been the best they've had. I think we're probably about to, for a year-long, multiple kicker situation. I hope that they got it right with Siebert, but we may be into, Chris Blewett, Brian Johnson, Nick Rose territory this year.
Terrible.
And look, Sunday, they didn't lose the game because Cade York missed two field goals and kicked the ball out of bounds. They lost the game primarily because their defense was horrendous, okay? As bad as it gets defensively in a game. But if he had made those two kicks, at least in the third quarter, the score would have looked a little bit more respectable. All right, what else do you have?
So a little bit of sad news yesterday. James Earl Jones passed away. Iconic actor. He was the voice of my childhood with Mufasa and mainly Darth Vader. So sad to see him pass away. Long life, though.
Yeah, and one of those guys that had an issue, right, as a young person with stuttering. And it's just, it's an amazing, story, an amazing voice, kind of the soundtrack, the voice track for just so much over the years. Incredible, incredible voice, unmistakable voice. It was sad to see, but what a run, right? He was 93?
93, 94? Yeah, that's a hell of a life.
Yeah, for sure. What else?
The Black Eyed Peas are planning to debut a new AI member for their Vegas residency. The member is going to be inspired by Empress Taylor Swift. I don't know what Empress Taylor Swift is, but that's the inspiration.
Whatever you just said needs more detail.
I will give as much as I can. So the Black Eyed Peas are doing a residency in Vegas. They're a musical group of... They dominated the 2000s.
So they're going to be one of those acts that hangs out in Vegas at, Cosmo or the Venetian or MGM or, wherever. They're going to be there for several months. Celine Dion, Elton John, U2, the whole
Adele,
thing.
Yeah.
Got that part. What's the AI member part?
So they're going to, it's going to be a new member that's going to be with them on stage.
A member of the band?
A member of the band. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Fergie was a part of the band. She left in 2018. They replaced her, but Will.i.am said, if you look back at like their 2009 album that has like this AI generated face, they were ahead of the game. They were predicting this, and they're going to debut a new AI member. I didn't even know they were still around, to be honest.
How does an AI member what do they do? Do they play? Do they sing?
Sing, I would imagine.
Oh God. All right. By the way, couldn't care less, honestly. You're not rushing out to Vegas to see the Black Eyed Peas.
I didn't think you were.
No offense. The year that they performed at the Super Bowl, I don't know what year that was. I think I'm thinking of the Super Bowl. I don't think it was a Final Four. But, you know, the Super Bowl used to do for the media. They probably still do it. And I went to, I don't know, 9 or 10 Super Bowls in a row. But on that Thursday of Super Bowl week, they would, for the media, would have a special, small, typically an acoustic, you know, based concert. And then take questions from the media from whomever the halftime performer was. And, they were there one year. So Fergie was up on the stage. And I do remember thinking, not what I was hoping for. Although I'll tell you, the one that was absolutely much better looking in real life. Now, this is 12 years ago, probably, was the Super Bowl Katy Perry did. She was gorgeous in person. I think she's one of those examples of somebody that's gotten even better looking as she's gotten older. She's got to be near 40, right? How old's Fergie?
Fergie is 49. I would imagine
Katy Perry
is younger than that.
Is she 40 yet?
Yeah, she definitely. She's 39. She'll be 40 in a little over a month.
Okay.
She went viral last week.
Why?
Look it up during the break. We can't say it on air.
Oh, we can't?
No, it was a comment that she made.
Doesn't she have like some new album out or something?
I haven't listened to Katy Perry music since 2012.
I haven't listened to her music either, but I think I saw something. I thought it was a commercial during one of the football games with her promoting a new album.
She's on a bunch of shows. She's married to Orlando Bloom.
Well, she's on, whatchamacallit, American Idol.
Also, can we...
She's been on that show for several years.
Round of applause that American Idol still exists in 2024.
It does, and I wonder... I don't watch it. There was a stretch there, especially when I was a big part of... when I was a part of Tony's show, and Tony was watching American Idol every single night. That's when I was watching it, but it's still on.
Do you ever text in to vote?
I think it's on ABC now, not Fox.
Yeah, it's definitely not on Fox. Fox has a new singing. Did you ever text in to vote on American Idol? Were you one of those guys?
Never once. Not once. But you know what it was, is when the show started, my kids were young, and it was like a family show to watch every week. And the kid, you know, the boys loved it. And we would sit there, and it was kind of like, you know, a thing to watch every week. I did... You know, I say I haven't watched that show, and I really haven't, but I did watch a couple of the episodes. Or I shouldn't say I watched, because I didn't watch on TV, but I saw with some of the YouTube clips, the girl that won it this year, I have no idea what her name is, but she could really sing.
I haven't seen one. I remember last year was the Hawaiian dude, the big Hawaiian dude. He could really sing, too. He was really
good.
Yeah,
big boy.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a guest, unless you have anything else.
No, that's all I got. We can get Darren Schatz.
You were going to tell me about the Prince Netflix documentary that's coming out and some of the controversy associated with that. I've read some of that stuff. We can do that tomorrow on your news.
Okay.
We got plenty of time. Up next, Aaron Schatz, the creator, the inventor of the DVOA metric. Let's find out where teams rank after 1 week of the season, specifically where Washington's defense ranks after 1 week of the season. We'll do that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. 1 week in the books. 17 more to go, 16 games for all of these teams. But what do we think so far? Aaron Schatz is here with us. He joins us courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. I love having Aaron on the show. He's with FTN Fantasy. He is the inventor, the creator of the DVOA metric, something that I refer to a lot. I'm glad you're coming on with me. Don't get me wrong with what I'm about to say. I love having you on like midway through the season, because like last year was a perfect example. You just, for whatever reason, the DVOA, you know, metric, which I'll have you explain in layman's terms to everybody here in a moment, but you were that measuring tool was down on Philadelphia, even at 9-1, 10-1. They just were not showing up as a team that was commensurate with the record that they had, and it proved out to be right. You know, they fell apart the rest of the year. But it's good to have you back. Hope you're well. It's only 1 week. But before we get started, because, you know, I love that DVOA metric. I think it's one of the most reasonable, advanced kind of ways of assessing what a team really is. But just for those that are new to it, just to explain it in layman's terms.
Sure. We take every play during the season. We analyze it based on the success, considering the down and distance. We compare that to a league average baseline that is adjusted for situation and opponent. That gives us DVOA.
Defensive adjusted value over average. Just, you know, consider it to be a very advanced way of measuring what a team is and what a team's units are. Offense, defense, special teams. So I guess my first question to you would be, is there any value at looking at the rankings after 1 week, week one of an NFL season?
I mean, there's a little bit of value. It's one game. It's the same value that there is from looking at week five on its own or week nine on its own. You know, New Orleans had a gigantic win over a bad team, but one of the top 10 week one wins we've ever measured. Most of the teams that win that big, even in week one, tend to be 500 or better over the course of the season, right? So New Orleans having such a huge win is a hint that what I said about them in the preseason is correct, that they are not a bad team, that they are an average team, and the fact that they walloped a bad opponent is a good indicator of that.
Do you, off the top of your head, do you have other week one big winners, you know, in terms of margin of victory and the way they did it, that you remember going on to have, you know, better than 500 years, that it was a really strong indicator of what they would become?
Oh, like the 2019 Ravens who beat Miami 59-10.
Right.
And went on to go 14-2, I believe.
Yeah.
The Saints are not doing that.
Right. Right. But I do think they can go
9-8.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is, you know, based on the way you look at this, like I'm looking through last year's week one results, and especially those that were a bit surprising. The Browns beat the Bengals by 3 touchdowns in the opener last year. They ended up in the postseason. I'm not sure everybody thought week one they would end up in the postseason. The Buccaneers beat the Vikings. I think that was an upset in week one last year. They went on to win. Now, I don't know where they were DVOA-wise. You know, was there any indication in Houston's week one win last year, they got beat by Baltimore 25-9, that the kind of year they had was in store?
Oh, now I have to go back and look. Okay. I mean, I think that is definitely, I mean, especially when you consider how good Baltimore is.
True.
And that we knew going into the season that Baltimore was good, then there's absolutely, we learned something from that. Now, there are exceptions. 2018, the Jets destroyed Detroit on Monday Night Football, I believe, in week one.
Sam
and guess
Darnold.
What? That team was terrible.
Yeah.
both of those teams were terrible. It was one terrible team whipping up on another terrible team. So there are years like that too, where the team that wins big in week one, the 49ers in 2017 beat the Rams 28-0, and then they only won one other game all year.
Interesting. You do put the same value. I know you do. I know DVOA does. But, you know, in terms of just looking at it from kind of a non-quantifiable way, you think week one is equivalent to week 7 or 8 as a standalone entity?
I actually think week one is a little less meaningful than week 7 or 8, because there's no question that with the drop to 3 preseason games,
exactly,
and the number of teams that play or that don't play their starters in the preseason, weeks 1 and 2 are almost like the preseason at this point. So I think I did analysis at one point, and if you look at the year in two game combinations, the most meaningless is the last 2 weeks of the season, because of all the teams that don't try in the last week.
Right.
And the next most meaningless is the first 2 weeks of the season. So yeah, we learn stuff from week one, but not as much as you learn from week 7 or week 8. No.
Yeah, I think that's totally intuitive too. I mean, I think what you said about the last 2 weeks, everybody understands. You get to the final 2 weeks and you've got playoff teams that are playing for something. You've got teams that are out of it that aren't. And in some cases, you've got playoff teams that aren't playing for anything. So it really kind of skews those results. And yes, I mean, that's why I asked you the question, is because I just, in being a fan of the sport and looking at it closely, not as closely as you do, week one tends to be a big head fake because these teams, especially now, right, Aaron, where they're not doing anything in the preseason, and by the way, the rosters are changing in the offseason more than they ever have, it takes a while to kind of figure it out.
Upsets are still upsets. The likelihood is still that the New England Patriots will have a losing record. The likelihood is still that the Cincinnati Bengals will have a winning record. Right? One game doesn't change that.
Yeah.
The biggest thing we learned in week one is Jordan Love getting hurt.
Exactly. Right.
Because they may have the worst backup quarterback situation in the entire league. And even though it's only 3 to 5 games, it's really going to hurt them.
Yeah. I saw you tweet something out, and you've already mentioned it, and I was going to ask you that the Saints are one of the best teams ever DVOA-wise after week one. And when I've had you on the show before, we've talked about the 91 Skins many times. The 91 Skins, they beat, by the way, in the opener, Detroit 45-0 in 1991. Sunday night football ended up being a
better team than the Panthers will end up being this year. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, Detroit ended up winning their division and having a home playoff game. It was the last year they won a playoff game, 91, before 2023, when they, you know, beat the Rams and beat the Buccaneers at home before losing to the 49ers in the title game. Other than New Orleans, give me some of your big takeaways from week one.
I said before the season that you have to assume that rookie quarterbacks are going to be bad. And guess what? Rookie quarterbacks were bad. In fact, Jaden Daniels was the best of the three. Because of his rushing value, and they ran a lot of screen passes and stuff. But Caleb Williams was bad, and Bo Nix, oh my God, can you throw more passes behind the line of scrimmage? Jeez.
Well, that's what he did in college.
Yeah. I think Dallas looked really good against a tough opponent. That is a good, you know. Yeah, defense is harder to predict from year to year, but that's a good defense. San Francisco against another good defense with a lot of stars. Really good cornerbacks. They really missed Hassan Reddick, who's holding out. That's a bit of a problem. I'm not that worried about the Ravens after losing to the Chiefs. I think that's two really good teams, and when two really good teams play, one of them has to win. And I thought it was interesting. The most interesting thing about Atlanta and Pittsburgh was that Kirk Cousins did not use a play-action fake at all. which is like, oh my God. Like the difference in mobility, like even like Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers did not have his usual mobility last night. But the difference in mobility between Aaron Rodgers, whose injury to his Achilles was 2 months earlier than Cousins' Achilles injury, woo, was really big.
It's interesting that you say that, and I don't like to, you know, I talk about Kirk a lot, and it just, it's a very triggering thing around here, Aaron, when I talk about him, because I'm a big fan, and he's a very polarizing figure around here. But I said on yesterday's show, he was in pistol the entire game and did not take any under center snaps where they were into play action, which he has thrived on his entire career. Nobody's been under center more. The bootleg, you know, easy pitch and catches off of, by the way, they have a running game with Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier.
Yeah,
I
like
didn't
that,
understand
that,
that at all.
Play action. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Drake London going deep and Bijan as your running back who attracts the attention. That you don't need to establish the run to play action. The
True.
Existence of Bijan Robinson on your roster establishes play action. Just his existence.
Why do you think they did that? Is he not 100% healthy?
He is not 100% healthy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a Zach Robinson offense. He comes from the Shanahan McVay tree. With that said, Matt Stafford's in pistol a lot, which is kind of interesting now that I think about it, because he is in pistol a lot. But I don't know. I thought that was one of the strangest things to watch Sunday, to take the king of play-action quarterback over the last 10 years and not run any play action in his first game back. They must have been concerned about his movement or whatever. What else? And anything individually other than the three rookie quarterbacks stand out to you?
Brian Thomas is really good.
The rookie wide receiver.
Yeah, right. He there were a lot less people talking about him, and lots of people talked about the top three guys, right? Odunze, Harrison, and Neighbors. It was surprising how little the Cardinals threw to Harrison, but you know, that'll change. And lots of people talked about Xavier Worthy because he's so fast and he went to Kansas City. Not a lot of people talked about Brian Thomas. Brian Thomas is really good, and Brian Thomas was second among receivers in value by my stats in week one.
We're talking to Aaron Schatz, FTNFantasy.com. I'm a customer, by the way, and it's something that I love to refer to and I love to look at throughout the season, whether it's teams or players, units especially. I'll tell you, for me, honestly, Aaron, it's a great prep tool for Washington's next opponent every week to look at this stuff. But let's focus in on Washington's week one game. You know, before you tell me where and tell everybody where they rank defensively after 1 week, I can't remember a team, and this is what Tampa did on Sunday, have eight total drives in the game. That was it, eight total drives. They scored on seven of those eight. That is a pretty good hit rate and pretty much checkmate in an NFL game. So I'm assuming Washington's defense is where it ended last year, somewhere near the bottom.
31st, yeah. Arizona came out 32nd in week one. This is, again, no opponent adjustments yet. So if you adjust for opponent, Washington was probably the worst, because Buffalo is obviously a really good offense, and Tampa Bay's offense is pretty average. That was a career day for Baker Mayfield. That's the best game he's ever played.
Yeah, it has to be. Although, you know, that team was really playing, you know, the year-to-year, you know, carryover kind of died when free agency became so significant in 93. But Tampa's one of those few teams, right, Aaron, that they were playing their best football at the end of last year. They won a playoff game. They were very competitive. That game was tied going into the fourth quarter in Detroit, and they brought everybody back.
Yeah.
You know, it's a unique situation. Typically, there's much more roster turnover, and I'm just wondering if perhaps Tampa's, you know, a throwback to, hey, you finish the season strong, there's a little bit of carryover effect. All right. Go ahead.
I said, we'll see. I mean, again, you know, usually there's not as much carryover. You want to believe there's going to be carryover, and it's counterintuitive, but there isn't really carryover. But this game, they certainly played very well on offense. Their defense was pretty average. Washington's offense had an average day.
Yeah. At Aschatz, S-C-H-A-T-Z, NFL on X on Twitter. By the way, you mentioned something, and I talk about it every once in a while, and I just want you to explain why, if there is a why. Offense is much more consistent year to year. There's much greater variance in defenses. And last night, look, they're playing the 49ers, but the Jets got, you know, absolutely run on to death. You know, you talked about Baltimore and their great defense. They played Kansas City in the opener. So obviously, you know, adjusting for opponent will come down the road. But why does defense not hold up year to year in the same way that offense does?
We don't know the answer to that. There are some theories. I think some of it has to do with just the quarterback position having so much importance on offense. And there's no one player who has as much importance on defense. I think some of it has to do with the defensive injuries playing a larger role than injuries on offense other than the quarterback. I think some of it has to do with the fact that a lot of parts of defense are what we would call a weak link system, which is that you're only as strong as your weakest link. So all you have to do is change one defensive back from a good defensive back to a bad defensive back, and now the opponent is just picking on that guy. But we don't know for sure why it is that defense is less consistent than offense.
Last one, because we didn't talk right before the season started, and you said that you were a little bit bullish on New Orleans. Give me a couple of the other teams, regardless of what happened in week one here, that you were optimistic about, you know, not the favorites, but somebody from, you know, maybe the back of the pack of the playoff field last year, or they weren't in the playoffs last year, that you think is in store for a good season, and maybe a team or two that will take a step back.
Cincinnati. Houston, I thought, is one of the top teams in the league now because they were so injured last year. And so even if Stroud does not improve, like, they're just going to be healthier this year. New Orleans, I think, is the best team in their division. And the other one, I don't think this is a team that's competing for anything, but I think New England is much better than people thought before the season. They were, I believe, had the lowest over-under total in the markets at 4.5. And I thought they were a lot closer to like 6.5 or 7. The offense is better than people realize, and the defense is pretty good.
And you were down on Washington primarily because of the rookie quarterback.
I was down on Washington, Chicago. I was down on Denver. I was down on Indianapolis because Richardson is effectively a rookie. He played pretty well in week one. I was down on the Chargers compared to the public. That's the other team I was down on. And they won in week one, but, you know, Vegas is really very good. So,
did you have the same view about Houston last year that you had about the three teams that started rookie quarterbacks on Sunday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had Houston near the bottom of our projections last year.
And it really is the aberration, right, with rookie quarterbacks, what Houston did.
18 out of 100 rookie quarterbacks in our history of our stats that had at least 200 pass attempts, 18 had above average passing DVOA. 18 out of 100. It is rare.
Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. Love catching up with you. Let's do it again maybe when we got 6, 7, 8 games in the books.
Yeah, and you know what? Again, you never know. Maybe Daniels is the one rookie who's good, and then when we talk in a few weeks, you'll be in a pretty good mood.
Hope you're right. Thank you, Aaron. Really appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
When we come back, we're going to do this on Tuesdays. Denton's going to give us a college football weekend recap. We'll talk a little Terps football. It was disappointing. on Saturday against Michigan State, and we had one of the upsets, maybe the upset of the year, to discuss as well. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app. Do want to tell you about Window Nation. They've got amazing September savings going on. If you're thinking about new windows, now is the perfect time. Window Nation leads the industry with an impressive 96% customer satisfaction rating. That means when you choose them, you're getting top-notch quality and outstanding service every step of the way. Replace your old drafty windows and enjoy up to 40% savings on your energy bills in winter and in summer. It gets even better. Window Nation offers an unbeatable lifetime warranty. That's their promise, that your new windows are built to last for years to come. Right now, take advantage of an exclusive offer. Buy two, get two free, no money down, no payments, and no interest charged for two full years. You're getting half price on the windows. By the time you pay for them in the year 2026, you'll be paying half price as well, without accruing any interest. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. Mention my name, Kevin Sheehan. They'll come out and give you a free, no-risk estimate.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.